Hello and welcome to Spirit of Truth Church for this talk on Divine Revelation, Revelation and Language. Been looking forward to this one, this discussion of language and whether or not it is a suitable medium through which divine revelation can be expressed has been of great interest to me for a very long time. You know, there's all of these questions of, for example, biblical inerrancy and the reliability of the New and Old Testament texts and various types of things. And naturally in this conversation, it comes up with, well, what about language itself? Can we actually articulate true statements about God? Can God reveal true statements about himself? Are these statements adequate? Or are they just characterizations of God? Do they actually describe God? Can we actually have true and right knowledge about God that's expressed with words? That's essentially what we're talking about tonight. And I'll say this, I think if we can, as much as we can, I am going to keep an eye on my chat box more than normal tonight, because this is going to go really well if we get questions, if people bring up arguments they've heard or various things they've heard. I think that could be really helpful tonight, is to bring up some of these things, some of the things that people have heard. Feel free to ask questions, do whatever you'd like, because again, I think that's actually going to help even the conversation here. I'm really looking forward to getting to talk about some of these things, so it should be good times. So let's go ahead and kick this off. So first, the author, Nash, starts out with his outline on the position of the nature of language. So essentially, theories of language are not independent things. They very much are byproducts of more general worldviews. So for example, say you hold to a naturalistic worldview, okay? You would then argue that language must have evolved. Okay, if you believe in materialism, you would say, well, people generally evolved language. Like language started with maybe sounds and grunts and vocalizations, and then that got kind of connected to different things, and then language sort of developed out of that, and then syntax would have come much later, and creative use of language would come much later. But that's the idea, right? It's, again, theories of language are byproducts of general worldviews. And this, oddly enough, is one of the reasons why theologians have given up in general on language as an adequate carrier of divinely revealed truth. Why? Because they've accepted, and this is what Nash argues, and I would agree with him, presuppositions that are contrary to the biblical worldview. And essentially, these presuppositions are, quote, incompatible with the view of language that makes information about the transcendent possible. In other words, they believe things that the Bible doesn't teach, but they believe things about God that just aren't true. And so thus, when they try to say, oh, well, can language be a means of communication about God, divine revelation, they just say no. And when I say that a lot of theologians have done this, I mean, I'm talking about mainly your liberal theologians, right? Your liberal theologians have by and large walked away from this. They've walked away from actually understanding the Bible as the word of God. Okay? Largely, they've walked away from it. Most of these guys hold that the Bible is his history, and they believe in some way, which we've talked about earlier, that God communicates through events or through the spirit or through some non-linguistic form. Now, what are some of these assumptions about language that are problematic? Okay. One assumption is that all language is incapable of expressing literal truth. Now, the problem you're going to find here is this, and this is very true in a lot of philosophy, this is very true in a lot of language, is that, and Frank Turek actually is probably one of the guys who really started to point this out with a lot of these theories, is, well, Frank Turek would say, for example, well, if all language is incapable of expressing literal truth, is the statement you made a literal statement? You know, and the person's got to say to themselves, oh, I guess that's a problem, right? That's a contradiction. The problem is these guys don't run their own philosophical grid or they don't run their theories through their own philosophical grid, is the problem. Any theory of language that is fundamentally destructive to language fails because the theory that is destructive cannot be articulated, right? If you hold that language has no meaning, then explain to me why I should read your 500-page book telling me that language has no meaning, right? You know, if you're going to say, oh, all language is symbolic in the sense that it can mean anything, in other words, unlimited meaning, well, then tell me how, like, okay, I read your book about this and I come away with the idea that no, meaning is completely stable. Well, that was my interpretation of your words. See, this is the problem with taking these catastrophically destructive views of language, like they do fail. And in this case, the fallacy here is that you know, this idea that it's an undeniable fact that all language is symbolic, and then thus infer that no language can be literally true. The problem is its equivocation. See, this is an issue, and I find this too with hermeneutics. We should talk about this. The problem is people say, oh, well, the Bible contains symbolism, therefore it contains allegory. That is equivocation. Why? Because symbols being used in two ways. One way to use the word symbol is non-literal. You can use symbol as non-literal, symbolic. It's a representation. It's non-literal. Okay, that's one way to do it. It's symbolic, so it's non-literal. You can also use symbol as representing something else. And I will argue that the symbolism in the Bible is symbolism in which words represent something else. It's not non-literal. It's that they represent something else. So the problem is they're saying, oh, well, all language is symbolic, therefore all language is non-literal. It's like, well, no, that's just not the case. That's completely ridiculous. If you hold to that view, then why am I even listening to the words you're speaking? I mean, it's to that level, right? It's to that level. So again, they make an error in that. The second assumption is this claim that human language is derived from sensible human experience of the world. Again, big problem with this. You could try to make the argument that, you know, dog, cat, window, house, like this is derived from sense experience. But what about philosophy? What about abstract mathematical and philosophical concepts? Those are not derived from senses. What about reason itself? Not derived from senses. See, the problem here is, how do you even express truth about a spiritual world or a transcendent being? And if you ever receive truth, how would you communicate it? See, the problem is it doesn't account for non-physical things and referring to or having conversations about non-physical things, which we do all the time. Every time we engage in philosophy, every time we engage in concepts like economy and things like that, like these aren't things you derive from senses. People don't come up with economic theories from senses. They come up with economic theories through thinking about things in abstract terms and then making concretes out of it. So again, major problems with some of these assumptions. So again, in a Christian context, I'm totally fine with symbols. I have no problem with them. They represent other things. I do not buy into an evolutionary understanding of language. I do not think that the human language is derived from sensible human experience of the world or sensory information. I would hold to a very different view. So that's much more of the evolutionary view. That's much more of the Epicurean sort of view of this. But now let's talk about rationalism a little bit. Noam Chomsky, for example, argues that that whole sense experience derivation of language is ridiculous. He argues that it's made possible by human thought, that actually human thought dictates the possibility of language. He says, quote, human language is associated with a specific type of mental organization, not simply a higher degree of intelligence. So he's actually going to argue that it's not just humans more intelligent than other things, that's why they have language, that actually it's their entire mental organization that actually allows for language. And so what he says is that actually language is partially innate. This accounts for creativity. It accounts for people's innate disposition to build grammar. He argues the principles of language are present at birth. And I would tend to agree with some of his theory, not all of it, but I think he's on the right track here. I don't really like Noam Chomsky, but again, I agree in the sense, yeah, it's present at birth, all right. You don't have the correct reason for its presence at birth, but I absolutely believe that language is coded into the human being, both at the brain level and at the soul level. Okay, again, the empiricist approach, human language arises from sense experience. The problem is that so much of language is not experience related. Again, where are you getting syntax and grammar from? That's not sense related. The problem with these defeatist theories of language, again, is that they promote, the promoter disregards the theory with respect to his or her own thoughts. So again, it's self-defeating, as Frank Turek would say. So what then is the better view? Well, the better view, I would argue, is the acceptance of a logos epistemology, which we've argued for. It's the idea, quote, that an omnipotent God created human beings as rational creatures who possess innately the capacity to think and to use language. That language is possible because humans, created in the image of God, the Imago Dei, possess innately a priori categories of thought and the ability to use and understand language. Now, why is this important? Again, what I argue here is that in the Imago Dei, God essentially codes rational thinking into humanity. Reason, rational thinking, fundamental principles, law of non-contradiction, all of that kind of good stuff that, yes, we articulate through philosophy. People just operate on that. People intuitively, instinctively operate with the law of non-contradiction every single day. Don't even think about it. It's built into your DNA, in a sense. It's built into your very soul through the Imago Dei, through the image of God. How do we know this? literally, there's a difference between hot and cold. There's a difference between I'm burning and I'm not burning. There's a difference between pain and not pain. There's a difference between a tree and a cat or a dog and a cat. Now, you might not say, well, I don't have the words for that, but it doesn't matter. People still fundamentally, even children, understand the difference between things, that this is not this. Now, yes, there's some object permanence. There's this development of the other, you know, where they have to start recognizing their other. That's basic biological development. The point is that it happens in development. The point is that, oh, no, this seems to be coded into the person. Once they get to a certain level of development, they've got that locked down. And you didn't have to explain it by busting out some, you know, by busting out, what is it here? Hold on a second. You know, philosophical foundations of a Christian worldview. We didn't have to pull this guy off the shelf just to explain to a two-year-old that they are not the other thing. They are not the ball they're holding. You know, you didn't have to do that. It's something that's built into the organism, the human organism itself. And I would argue that's because of the Imago Dei. Now, what do we call this? We call this a derivative logos. In other words, God is the ultimate logos. He has the knowledge of all things. He has the knowledge of all categories. He has all mathematical, physical knowledge, everything. And what he's done is he's given humanity two things. He's given humanity a rational system built in, built into the organism, innate, part of the image of God. That is a philosophical system that allows mankind to operate very quickly, very early on in human life, that allows mankind to operate in a rational way. That people are not inherently blank slates. They are not inherently irrational. In fact, they are very rational. And it's only through basically suppressing rationality, it's only through suppressing the truth about reality that people go off the deep end. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I want to make sure I remember to address this, because I would argue that one of the main issues with humanity in terms of our world and things, why people are going off the deep end with sexuality issues, with gender issues, with wokeism issues, all the different types of things they do, with even with atheism, with other things, is because on some fundamental level, they're suppressing some form of truth. And I would argue that suppression of truth that they're doing is actually suppressing the idea that God exists, that there is a God. And it's fascinating because Plantinga argues that belief in God is properly basic. Your faculties, as they are, should form the belief in a God, as just that's just the natural course of things. And it's only by suppressing these ideas, suppressing these things, that you actually then begin to suppress biblical worldview. And once you suppress biblical worldview, you now have a vacuum. Here's a great example of this. Say, for, I know I'm talking fast. I apologize for talking so fast, but I'm kind of keep my thoughts here. Say, for example, male and female. We'll just use that one. It's an easy one. Male and female. Okay. You are actually, we'll even go even prior to that. You exist. You're a rational creature. You are finite. The more you understand about yourself, that you've sinned, that there is morality, that you've sinned against, you know, in this morality. The more that begs the question of, is there a God? Well, if I'm a sinful being, surely there must be a holy being to judge me. If I'm a finite rational being, surely there must be an infinite rational being that created me or some reason why I exist. The second you then suppress things like, oh, I'm sinful. No, I'm not. Oh, you know, rationality governs the world. No, it doesn't. You can start denying things like God. But the second you do that, where's your basis of male and female? Where's your basis of sexuality? Where's your basis of morality? You begin to erode all of those things. And so then you come up with a society that fundamentally wants to ignore justice completely. I mean, we can point out situations where great crime is being done around the world and quite literally people are being let off scot-free. There's just no justice. Why? Because they've eroded the reason for the justice, which is God. God is the reason why we have justice. Similar things. What about genders and things? Well, once you've eroded God's plan for gender, gender suddenly becomes subjective, becomes whatever you want. This is the issue. It's like once you start eliminating things, you start denying reality and creating a reality of your own to live in. Now, bringing this back to rationality and language, why is there an attack on language? Why are the deconstructions so bent on destroying meaning in language? They say it in their own writings. A lot of these guys talk about the Bible as having a hold on society. They talk about people living according to scripture. And their goal is to free people from that. Their goal is to so erode language that people no longer have faith in the Bible. Because if you don't have faith that you can communicate in language, why in the world would you believe the Bible has any truth in it? Again, if you fundamentally doubt our ability to communicate with each other, why would you believe the Bible in the first place? And so a lot of these guys talk about Christianity in their writings. They talk about how basically they want to get rid of the Bible. That's one of the main points. Now, I'd like to go ahead and read a quote. This is from Carl F. H. Henry. This is a very good quote here, quoted by Nash. But one of my really fun quotes here. Quote, since every mind is lightened by the logos or reason of God, thought stands behind language. Man's ability to think and to speak is God-given for certain essential purposes, for receiving a verbal revelation, for approaching God in prayer, and for conversing with other men about God and spiritual realities. The gift of human speech and language, in brief, presupposes the imago Dei, particularly rationality. I want you to think about this. Why do we have language? So that God can communicate with us in a way that is understandable and meaningful, in a way that's relational. Why do we have language? To approach God in prayer, for a way for us to communicate back to God, to engage in relationship with Him. Why do we have language? To converse with other people about the truth of God. When you remove God from the picture, when you deny the reality of God, you lose so much. You lose an incredible amount. You see, people are often wandering about for purpose in their life. What's the purpose of my life? And you know, I get it. I understand it. Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? Sometimes life feels very futile. When we take a biblical worldview, I want to show you something. God cursed Adam and Eve, and He cursed the ground. He said, the ground is going to be hard for you to work. In other words, Adam's purpose to work the ground was going to become arduous. It was going to become difficult. It was going to become futile. So no wonder when we do our work in this world, it sometimes feels futile. It sometimes feels, you know, just like you're just, the land's just begrudging you. It feels hard. And it sometimes, again, it feels like, well, what is my purpose? This isn't working. What is my purpose? Here's the point. With a biblical worldview and belief in God, we understand one thing very clearly. That work was always going to be hard. But that doesn't mean it lacks purpose. The question is, how do we understand that the difficulty we endure is part of the plan? I'll say it like this. When we begin to accept reality as it is, accept ourselves as sinful, accept our need of a savior, accept the reality of gender, accept the reality of morality, accept the reality of the difficulty of work and the curse that God has laid upon man, we begin to accept the world we occupy and live in. And we begin to accept reality rather than fighting against that reality with our entire being. We begin to connect with God's redemptive purposes in the whole thing. And so what is the point of struggling and work? Struggling and work makes me appreciate the reality of the millennial kingdom, the reality of heaven, the reality of salvation all the more. The reality that this was not the way things were, quote, supposed to be, that they won't be this way forever, that this curse will one day be lifted. It keeps me humble. It keeps me reliant on Him in a state of sin. See, the thing is, we don't need hard work in heaven, or we don't need hard work in the millennial kingdom. Why? Because we're not in a state of sin. You see, we need hard work. The ground needs to be cursed. Why? To keep us dependent on Him. Because if He gave us the blessings of the millennial kingdom as sinful people, we would abuse it to the nth degree. Arguably, you can look at the history of Israel during the Mosaic Covenant and see this, that essentially they were given the blessings of the millennial kingdom in many senses, not completely, but in many ways. And what happened? Rampant abuse. It wasn't until they were exiled that they said, oh, yep, we didn't do this right. We weren't worshiping God. We had idols like crazy and all this kind of stuff. So this is really important kind of things. So when we get back to language, and Henry's comment about the purpose of language, why do we have language? Most people don't ever ask that question. What was language really about? Converse with God, receive revelation from God, converse with each other. You see, when you deny reality, you deny God, you lose two purposes right off the bat. And you degrade the third to such an extent that your language becomes evil all the time. Our language is meant to be holy. Our language is meant to be edifying and uplifting, not tearing down. But yet, if you deny God, that's all it can be. That's what it becomes. Here's the thing. I'll go ahead and quote Henry again. I believe that the sufficiency, quote, of human language to communicate truth about a transcendent God rests on the theomorphism of created man. In other words, the fact that God was made in the image of, and the man was made in the image of God, whom God made a language user able to receive God's linguistic communication and respond in kind. Language is a divinely given instrument. I love that. And quote, communication is possible because the human creatures using language are enlightened by the divine logos and are in possession of certain innate ideas. This is the theory of language that I would hold to. It's pivotal. It's pivotal to even approach the Bible. It's pivotal. And here's the thing. It's why I hold the literal grammatic historical interpretation. Because this theory of language requires literal grammatical historical interpretation. It has symbols, but it is not unliteral in that sense. Things mean other things, but it's not literal. So going to the questions here, and I'm glad, thank you so much for posing the questions. Never thought about the important topic. Yeah, I agree. It's a fun topic. My friend says, in our response, she says, you're being too literal is a negative thing. Why would someone say that? I was always confused because how else can I interpret her words? Well, when someone says that you're being too literal, it's because they're not precise with their language. And the reality is being precise with one's language is actually, it's a hard thing. It requires a lot of work. It requires a lot of thinking. And there are just people who aren't, you know, quite a sense of language. I used to be a lot more loose with my language. I've tried. My wife, Anna, has asked me to continue to be more precise in my language. And so I recognize there's a holiness aspect to that. And so I try to be more precise in my language, but even I'm not perfect. But the comment there is, you're being too literal, is I would say this, depending on what was said, you know, if someone says something and there's an inherent contradiction, I think it's valid to point that out. It's valid to say, you know, actually you're believing something contradictory, at least give them a chance to kind of correct themselves or whatnot. But if someone says, oh, you're being too literal, it's like, as a way to deny, you know, their own contradictions. Well, that's just sin nature. That's all that is. That's just sin nature. Oh, we've actually gone about a half hour. That's pretty good. All right. Any other thoughts or questions? I do want to kind of sit here for a moment. Any other thoughts or questions? You guys got to hear my thoughts on this. Again, I'll just kind of reiterate what I was saying, which is, you know, I believe, and actually another funny thing about language actually starts very complicated and actually degrades over time. More modern languages are much simpler than older languages. Again, another strike against this idea of the evolution of language. Another issue is that no other animal has syntax and no other animal has, I think it's recapitulation, the idea to be able to talk about the thoughts of something. They don't have that, and that's unique to humanity. And there's no evolutionary pathway to something like that. So it doesn't actually make sense that language evolved. Language starts fully formed and very complete and very grammatical, and then actually degrades over time. Slang works its way in. Bad grammar works its way in, not the other way around. So kind of interesting thoughts as well about language. But I would argue that language is the perfect vehicle to communicate truth about God. I just argue also that it doesn't mean that we are getting the exact full detail of God. What we're getting is the truth that he wants to communicate about himself. We're getting true statements about him. They're not exhaustive, but they are true. Again, how can God exhaustively communicate himself? Well, he can't. I would argue that in that sense, language is not capable of exhaustively communicating all truth about God in the sense that we could receive an infinite understanding of God. I think that's ridiculous. I think, though, that he communicates truth about himself, the truth that we need to have a proper relationship. So do we have language because God does, and we are made in his image? Yes, that's correct. We have language because of intertrinitarian communication. I would argue that intertrinitarian communication is part of the reason why we have language. We also have language because God has created us to be in communication with each other and with him. And that is part of the Imago Dei. In other words, that God has language as part of who he is, and he has given us this gift of language, the divinely gift of language. He has divinely given this gift of language through the Imago Dei, through the image of God. And thus we can communicate and be rational, personal beings. Absolutely. Very good questions. Very good comments. All right, I'll wait and see if there's any others that pop in here, but these are really good. These are really good. I appreciate these. All right, and with that, I'll go ahead and open up a Zoom call. We'll get zoomy with it here. Let me see. Think God uses it to communicate with us and for us between each other. Yeah, I agree. I think we need to start seeing language as a gift. We need to start being thankful for language at every juncture. All right, I'm going to go ahead and post church meetings link for those who wish to join. I hope people enjoyed this. I really enjoyed this church meetings link. Yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you guys did as well. There's the link. Again, I have to shut everything down, then I'll open up, but you can be in the waiting room now. All right, and with that, thank you guys so much for joining us here at Spirit of Truth Church. I hope you enjoyed this talk on the divine revelation, revelation, and language. And I think we've got one more of these in the series, so look forward to that next week. Hope you guys have a wonderful night. Oh, There's one more here. Why do people deny the Trinity think about language? Or what do people deny the Trinity think about language? Mainly that it's evolved. Mainly that it's evolved. That it's the process of evolution. Yeah, typically. Yeah. All right, so one last closing. Again, thank you so much for joining us here at Spirit of Truth Church for this talk on divine revelation, revelation language. And I hope you had a good time. I look forward to seeing you next time. Have a nice night.